I think you have to keep the big picture in mind. So over the course of a year, I have a work-life balance. Today, I may feel guilty because I'm missing a soccer game, but next week I'll make the soccer game and I'll have something else to do. I can't take each day as a snapshot. I have to look at the whole picture.
That was Brooke Nico, knitwear designer, teacher, author, and yarn shop owner, on this episode of Power Pearls Podcast, where you'll always hear candid conversations with everyday knitters and designers with compelling backstories. I'm Karagat Warner, host of Power Pearls Podcast, and I will dig deep and ask the big question, why we started knitting and what keeps our needles going. This episode was brought to you by Annie's Signature Designs, who has recently launched Autumn Bliss, a collection of more than 40 knit and crochet patterns envisioned by Lena Skvargason, lead designer of Annie's Signature Designs, along with supporting like-minded designers, including myself, Robin Chichula, Megan Jones, Jackie Dougherty, and more. So if you really want to learn more, go on and visit Annie's Signature Designs.com. On this episode of Power Pearls Podcast, I am chatting with Brooke Nico, who lives in Kirkwood, Missouri, which is a suburb outside of St. Louis. And she's also the founder of Kirkwood Knittery, which she now runs with business partner Robin Schreger. She's been a seamstress all her life, and Brooke learned to sew her own clothes from an early age. In 2000, she actually taught herself to knit and fell in love with the concept of creating her own fabric while making a garment. If you can believe it, Brooke learned how to knit from Knitting for Dummies, which I find to be incredible. So she's never taken a live class. And her very first project was actually an intarsia sweater that she made for her son. And that was the only pattern she ever made, you know, from like a magazine. And after that, she hit the ground running and started designing. She's authored several books. She teaches at shows across the country. She also has the yarn shop. And she's a passionate knitter. There you go. Her friends describe her as creative, sharp, and witty. And she often talks to her knitting. She loves shoes, bags, and coffee. Love that combination. Okay, you guys, so let's dig into the episode and meet Brooke Nico. I hope you enjoy. Hey, Brooke, I am so excited to have you on the Power Pearls Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be with you.
We saw each other, gosh, it was about a month ago in Washington, D.C. at TNNA, which is the National Needle Arts Association. For anyone listening that doesn't know what that is, but by now you guys do know because I've been talking about it a lot. But anyways, we tried to like make this happen and do like a very impromptu kind of episode, but you know, we get so busy and so that just didn't happen. But anyway, so I'm glad that we're able to do it now. So I wanted to ask you some background stuff first, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how we first met.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Well, the first time I actually saw you was when you were wearing your cowboy boots. Yeah, like that's your signature, right? Is your cowboy boots. Do you still wear them? I guess you do, right? You're always wearing your boots.
They're the most comfortable shoes I own, and they're great for shows and things when I'm on my feet all day. Love
yeah.
them.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And so I remember seeing you once coming down an escalator. This was in Columbus. And I was like, ooh, that's Brooke Nico. She's the lace darling of the industry. And I had to find out, you know, I had to get in touch with you and ask you to design something for the magazine. And I don't remember like when we actually met, it was probably over drinks, right?
I think it was at the cocktail party at the very first BK Live in New York.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was so much fun.
It was.
And then, you know, we just started seeing each other at the trade shows. And then last year you were at the Annie's Craft Festival, which was cool because we actually had some hang time there. So that was really nice. We like connected a little bit. So that was awesome. So I'm glad that we were able to do that. So anyway, let's dig into your, you know, your background. Now, you're just a busy woman. I mean, I don't know how you do it all. So let's see, you're a shop owner, you're a designer, you're an author, you're a teacher. Yep. Oh, and you're a passionate knitter. You're still a passionate knitter, which is amazing. But before we explore all these areas, I want you to take the listeners back in time, and I want you to share when you first discovered knitting and what kind of impact it had in your life at the time when you discovered it, and if there was a pivotal moment that really made you embrace this craft. So why don't you take it away?
Okay. I actually taught myself how to knit. It would be 14 years ago now. I used to work in early childhood as a teacher, but then I had started my family. And at the time I had two boys, they were 4 and 2. And it was not easy to be teaching toddlers all day and then come home to my own kids. So I decided I would take a break from teaching and I would be a stay-at-home mom for a while. I had always sewn. I was a seamstress from a very early age. But also with the kids, I thought perhaps they might want bedroom. So I had to give up my studio. So there I was. Suddenly I had no job. I was a stay-at-home mom all day with two young kids, and I had to give up my craft, my hobby. And I made it about 1 week. And I can remember one Sunday morning, we were going to watch football games all day. And I said, I've got to teach myself how to knit. That's all there is to it. So I ran to the store and I bought Knitting for Dummies, skein of yarn and needles, and I taught myself how to knit.
Wow. Knitting for Dummies. That is amazing. So you never went to a class. You didn't take like a live. Wow. But why knitting? Because you were a sewer.
Right.
But why did you say, I have to learn how to knit?
Portability. Sewing isn't portable. You've got to have your machine with you at all times. And I needed something that I could carry to the park with me when I had the kids. I needed something that I could take wherever I needed to take and put away very quickly when I had to take care of the boys and things like that.
Mm. Well, it's just very practical then. That's the truth about knitting. And I think, because I'm also a sewer, but haven't done much of it. I mean, my sewing machine is collecting dust. And I think that happens for many of us as knitters. It's like when we discover it, we're like, oh my gosh, this can go with me anywhere. I mean, I can sit on the couch and be social with my family and not seem like a hermit because I'm in my craft room. You know what I mean? So that's amazing.
And I always say it's so funny at the shop, we'll often have people come in and say, I want to learn how to knit, but I just don't have the patience for it. And to me, it's those of us who don't have patience who are more attracted to knitting, because I can't just sit and do nothing. So I can sit and be hanging out with my family, but I'm still knitting and achieving something.
Yeah, and I completely get that, because I feel like knitting, in a way, it just gives me this kind of sense of presence. Personally, I don't get impatient, or I don't understand that either, you know, and I guess it has to do with like our temperament when it comes to what we like, what we don't like, you know. But with knitting, it's like this exploration that, I mean, it's just, you're always learning, right? And that's how I look at it. It's like, I can't wait to learn and discover the next thing.
Yes.
For you, though, when you first learned, so that pivotal moment was when you were sitting on the couch or whatever you were doing, you're like, I must learn how to knit. So when you first dove in, was it love at first sight, or were you frustrated and did you let it go? Or was it like just out of the gate, you were running and that was it?
Oh, no, I was terribly frustrated. I could not get the purl stitch to save my life. So I finally did actually have to ask my sister to show me how to do the purl stitch. But then after that, I was kind of up and going. I made those, you know, made swatches for a few days. And then I went to my local yarn shop at the time and said, okay, I'm ready to make something. And I looked through garments and patterns and tried to find, you know, something that was, quote, easy. And none of those things were what I wanted. And the yarn shop owner gave me the best advice. She said, and I tell people this all the time, if you want the finished garment, you will learn the skills you need to learn to make it. So pick something that you'll love. And I did. The first thing I made was an intarsia sweater for my 2-year-old son.
Wow. So intarsia was the first thing you made. Most knitters aren't going to jump into intarsia, but like you... And I know this about you. You've got this kind of engineering mindset. I mean, you love the math. You know, because when I think of you, I always think of lace, like I said earlier, and you're prolific, kind of your designs in that area, and how it seems like the lace just kind of flows off your needle. So you're not even thinking about it. I mean, I've had conversations with you and you're just looking at me and off comes the lace, you know? And that's, again, like you just said it, find what you like. And you happen to pick intarsia. Most knitters would be like, okay, I'll stick with garter stitch, but you, but you went with intarsia. And so I think it's right. Don't expect so much of yourself. Just go with what feels good, right? I mean, that's what it's, yeah.
Exactly. And I find different people, different things stick in their brain and it just fits with where you are in your life. For me, garter stitch takes much longer and is much more difficult, frankly, than lace, because that's what the way my brain works.
Really? That's so interesting. Okay. So then when did you discover lace and like why? I mean, because you're, that's you. That's who you, but that's really what you're known for. I mean, I know you do more than lace, but you're just really, I'll use the word again, prolific when it comes to lace and all different, you know, just fixing lace too, right? I mean, like, fixing lace, that's insane. But why lace?
I do. I like the mathematical aspect of it. I love watching the stitches move around. And it is very engineering minded, I think. I mean, my favorite thing to do is chart things. I just love charting things. Mm. I have a friend who's a tech editor, and occasionally she'll send me something and say, you know, can you please make sense out of this? And I'm like, oh, yay, I love that. Yeah. So after I made my first sweater, I just started playing around, had so much fun playing around with stitch dictionaries and just trying out stitches. And I guess the lace ones, like I said, just kind of stuck in my brain.
Wow. And so what about cable work? Would you consider that similar? Because you just mentioned how stitches travel and move on lace. They do the same with cable work. Do you feel the same way about that technique?
I do. And I've been doing a lot lately with cables and lace combined and things like that. So yes, I do. There are so many amazingly talented cable designers out there that, you know, I could never compete with that level. There are you know, so many people I think of that are extremely talented.
Yeah. So what do you say to someone though, that comes in your shop that's, they are interested in lace or cables, but they're intimidated. And I'm sure people listening too. So I'm kind of like saying this for them too. What advice do you give them?
Stitch markers.
Mm, they're your friends, aren't they?
Stitch markers are great.
Yeah.
Especially with lace and probably also with cables, is to spend the time swatching. You know, that's when you get to learn how the stitches are interacting with each other. A lot of times with lace motifs, after you've done it a few times, you've done a few repeats of whatever the motif is, it becomes a little more intuitive. And I'm a big fan of charts. I think charts are really key to, again, seeing where the stitches are moving and what they're doing. For example, why we're choosing to do a knit two together here instead of a slip, slip, knit.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And I think also charts are so much more visual.
Yes.
And I think that I see this, you know, with the magazine, because it's, even though I'm not on your side of the fence as a shop owner, I talk to a lot of the customers through email or surveys or whatever. Now I do a lot of these Facebook Live videos. And so it's really interesting just to see the psychology of knitters. And they're, again, being intimidated by a chart when a chart makes it easier. Imagine taking a lace design. I mean, you know this, you've done some work for the magazine. If we were to write out your pattern, it would be a nightmare. It would take up most of the magazine.
Yes, exactly. It would. And also, I think it just in terms of the tech editing piece of it, when a magazine sends me my pattern after it's been edited, you know, for proof, I can pick out a mistake in a chart very quickly. It's really hard for me to pick out a mistake in a set of written instructions.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think that sometimes the way the words are written, I mean, one little word.
A comma
or work from instead of work to or whatever.
Exactly.
Crazy, right?
Right.
And it's those things that trip you up and would totally trip up a knitter, especially a new knitter. I mean, I sometimes get tripped up where your confidence wanes a little bit. Even if you're a really advanced knitter, you could be like, wait, am I really, you know, can I trust myself on this one, you know, in this pattern? And having you know, if it's a simpler pattern, both the chart and the pattern, it kind of gives you that extra confidence. But as you're saying, it's more visual. At least you're making your life so much easier if you can learn how to read a lace chart.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Yeah. We'll switch gears a little bit here. So your shop, we talked a little bit about, you know, how you work with your with customers and, you know, knitters just that are seeking help and how you can empower them. And we'll go back to that in a little bit, but I wanted to talk about designing and authoring books. What came first, the chicken or the egg, I guess is where I'm going with this. Did you have the shop first and then start the designing path and teaching and such? Or did you start designing and then own the shop?
So I guess it was kind of simultaneous. After I made that Intarsia sweater, I really never made anything again from a pattern. I really started designing my own things right away. And I was only designing for myself. And it was always just, what do I want to wear? So I was, you know, just making pieces for my wardrobe, not for any publication purposes. At the same time, the opportunity came for me to open this shop. So I did that. And then I went to a conference wearing several of my pieces. And at that time, Tricia approached me about doing some pieces for her magazine for Vogue Knitting. I guess then I realized that is actually a career option. I never even knew it was a career option.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Wow. So these days, where do you focus most of your efforts? You know, because you've got the shop, you've got the designing, you've got the books, you've been able to see like the big picture, like where, where the money really comes from. Where would you say you spend most of your time?
You know, I think this is an industry where you just always have to have lots of balls in the air and you have to really diversify a lot to make ends meet because none of the pieces are hugely financially successful. I've chosen to do this because I want a work-life balance. And so really on any given day, it depends what I'm going to focus on and what works with my needs for the day or what I have to get done or deadlines I may have. I am kind of scaling back on the teaching a little bit just for the next year. But the designing I'm always going at, whenever I have a great idea, I shoot it out there and the shop is always here. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. You talked a little bit about, well, a couple of things that I want to circle back to.
Uh-huh.
And it was the work-life balance.
Yes.
Do you really believe in that? You know, I mean, that's something that I've talked about before. And some people have some interesting ways of rephrasing that. But would you mind talking about that? Like, do you feel like that is a real thing? Is that a myth? Or how do you try to achieve that?
I think you have to keep the big picture in mind. So over the course of a year, I have a work-life balance. Today, I may feel guilty because I'm missing a soccer game, but next week I'll make the soccer game and I'll have something else to do. You know, I think I can't take each day as a snapshot. I have to look at the whole picture. But I chose this because I can go to the soccer game and still be working on a project at the same time and knit while I'm there.
Hmm. I like that. I mean, I like how you're saying you look at the big picture because day to day is going to change. It's going to sort of, you're never going to be able to control every little aspect of your day. And I think that that's what happens when it doesn't matter whether you're in business for yourself or, you know, you work a day job and you're just trying to achieve many different things and, you know, check them off your list.
Yeah.
But when you look back, you know, like at all those stepping stones, I guess, or I can't think of the right word, but you look back and you say, you know, I did a lot of those big things on my list. I can feel happy about that. And then also it's, I'm not going to say, you know, compromising, but realizing that life is going to throw punches and you can't really control. We think we can control the things that happen that come into our life, but we really can't.
No, we can't.
It's how we react to them, right? And how we manage them.
Right, exactly. I mean, and I just think it's all about the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then going back to this whole, you know, this business of knitting, of yarn, why did you pick this business?
I don't know that I did pick it. I think it picked me.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know that I ever made a conscious decision to do this. It just opportunities kind of kept, obviously I made decisions to pick up on the opportunities that happened to me. Yeah. It was just opportunities kept happening. So therefore, here I am.
Yes.
The story of how the shop happened is just another example of that. My local yarn shop at the time was a shop that did not have a very good reputation for customer service, very limited hours, and not the nicest woman who owned it. And I dropped in one afternoon to grab a pair of needles. And it was kind of one of those shops that when you had to come in, you had to kind of gird yourself as you got out of the car and said, okay, I'm just going to run in, get my needles, and leave. Well, it turned out, I found out that the owner was battling cancer and was needing someone to help while she got treatments. And I said, I live right around the corner. I'm happy to come in on a moment's notice and help you. Well, long story short, she ended up being very ill, and I ended up running the store for her for the last year of her life while she was in hospice, and ended up just being a lovely lady that, you know, there are other things that happened, but she was a lovely lady and helped her through hospice, and she passed away. And at the same time, an old friend of mine came in to actually ask for a donation for her auction. And we got to talking, and she said, you know, this is the weirdest thing. I had a dream last night that you and I opened a yarn shop. And I said, well, let me tell you what's happening. This shop is going to close because the owner is terminally ill. And things just kind of fell into place. And now here we are, 10 years later.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. That really is. And your shop is called Kirkwood Knittery, right? And that's in St. Louis. I was just giving you a little plug there.
Thank you.
I was gonna tell you to share that at the end, but since we're talking about it right now, yeah. And yeah, it's a lovely shop, and of course I've been there, came for a visit in St. Louis, and I really would love to again. It would be awesome. Yeah, I did this whirlwind tour through St. Louis, and I can't believe how many yarn shops are in that area. It's amazing.
Yeah,
but your shop is, you know, it stands out, you know, and it's still. I was amazed at all the people that came out that evening when I came in to visit. So it was wonderful to be invited. So thank you. So let me ask you this, and I hope I don't put you on the spot, because I've been asking you some different questions than I think I had primed you with. Hopefully that's okay. But anyway, you're doing great. You're doing great. Yeah. So if you could go back before you started your business and visited your future self, what advice would you give?
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I'm not.
Would you still do it?
Oh, I would definitely do it. Yes, I would definitely do it. And I'm even trying to think what I would do differently given my personality and, again, that work-life balance. I'm not sure that I would do much differently. I love every piece of it. I think, if anything, I would have said I would have taken more time off from the shop earlier. That, you know, when we first started, I was pretty much working 60, 70 hours a week. And I think I probably would have said, you need to pace yourself a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not sure that I would have changed many of my choices.
So what is the biggest struggle when it comes to making a living through this craft?
Keeping all the balls in the air. You know, on any given time, I can have 3 deadlines coming up, and then we're planning a sale at the shop, or it's time to, you know, order things. And I've got to also start planning new classes for the rounds of conferences and start thinking about book proposals. You know, so there's always a lot of balls in the air. And unfortunately, I am not a great agenda keeper. So I love people who are able to write to-do lists. I am not good at that.
Yeah. I mean, I know for myself, I sometimes find it hard to know what comes first, second, third, you know, especially when you're doing something that you have to drive yourself, like that you have to figure out what the priorities are.
Yes.
Because everything seems like a priority sometimes, right? It's like, well, yeah. where do I start? That I can totally relate to.
To not always be operating in panic mode, you know, that, okay, well, what comes first today is what needs to be done by 5 o'clock today, instead of pacing things out a little better.
Exactly. And I think it's when that day is upon you to be mindful about what you just said, what needs to get done by 5 p.m. today. And you always know what that is.
Yeah.
I actually call them frogs. Brian Tracy, who's a business expert, he came up with this book called Eat That Frog. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
No.
Anyway, it's a tiny little book. It's great. And it's about eating your biggest and ugliest frog first thing in the day.
Ah.
And figuring out what that frog is. And that's like your mission. That's the most important thing to do every day. So hey, that was the best advice.
Yeah.
Just a few more questions because, you know, we probably have to wrap up soon, and I appreciate your time. But when it comes to your passion for knitting, I always ask this question. I'm very curious about this, especially when you are in business now with your craft. Are you ever afraid of losing your passion for knitting because it's your business? And if so, what keeps your excitement alive?
There are things that I keep separate until I'm ready to put it out there. There are things that I do only for myself. There are a lot of things that I've designed that I know would never be published because it would be a 50-page pattern and just simply isn't marketable. And I really do make sure to take time to do those things. This is my fun knitting. And maybe at some point in 6 months, I'll come back and revisit that and figure out a way that I can simplify the pattern to make it publishable. But right now, I'm just doing this for myself. Because, you know, when I knit for publications, for designing, it is a different mindset. It's not necessarily what I would want to wear. So I do try to keep those things separate. I'm also always aware of trying to expand and learn new skills. So like right now, I'm playing a lot with cables and lace combined. And I'm going to play with that for 6 months to a year before I think about putting it out in the world.
Mm, that's great. Do you also contract stitchers to make the samples of your designs? Because I know that's something that, at least when I was a designer, and I know some designers do this, so they can keep their love of knitting for themselves. Do you do that, or do you knit all your own samples?
I knit most of my own because that is the part I love.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times, especially with the books, when I've contracted things out, but most of the time I knit my own stuff because that is the part I like.
Yeah. So what's the best piece of advice that was ever given to you?
Like I said, that from the shop owner is, if you want the finished piece, you'll do what needs to be done and learn what you need to learn to make it. And that's still, I think, the best advice, not only just in knitting, in life in general. You know, I think, especially with my kids, I think sometimes it's easy to take the easy way out. For example, they all had summer reading to do and they could pick anything, but they had to read a book at their appropriate grade level, obviously. And one of my kids picked a really small book. And right now he's like, this is the most boring book I've ever read. I'm like, yes, you took the easy way out, but now you're not engaged and you're not enjoying it, as opposed to reading a book that may be 500 pages long, but you would enjoy the process more.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah.
Because we hate getting out of our comfort zone, but yes, when we do, I mean, it may sound cliche, but when we do get out of that comfort zone, we learn so much more and we grow as a result. So yeah, that's the best advice.
It is good advice.
This was great. I'm so happy that you could join me. So how can the listeners find you? And again, share your shop information as well.
Yeah, I'm at, the shop is Kirkwood Knittery. We're in Kirkwood, Missouri. And we have a website, www.kirkwoodknittery.com. I'm on Ravelry as BD Nico, and I'm on Facebook as Brooke Nico.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Brooke.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. And I want to just give a shout out again to you, Brooke. Thank you so much for joining me. It was a great episode. I'm really glad that we were able to connect. We've been trying to do this. We tried to do it at TNNA. It would have been a lot of fun just to kind of do a little impromptu, but this was great. You know, we had some time to really chat, and that's something that we don't always get to do at the shows. So thanks again. And you guys, I hope you enjoyed this. So remember to go and check out Brooke on Ravelry. And if you do live in the St. Louis area, you must check out her shop. It's lovely. So with that, I will leave you, and I'll see y'all next time. Did you know that you can become a sponsor of Power Pearls podcast? Well, I want to share a little bit with you now how this works. Okay, so first of all, the podcast is free and always will be. But if you absolutely are loving this show and you want to do more, you can help. You can do something to help this show stay sustainable for the long haul. And you can become a sponsor at whatever level feels comfortable for you. And so if you go on over to patreon.com. So that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/powerpearlspodcast. You can see what's going on over there. You can see all the different levels. And I give rewards, you know, for you taking part in this ground floor effort to help the show stay sustainable. So for example, at just the $5 per month level, you get my patron only audio podcast called The Secret Sauce to a Thriving Creative Business. And in this informative recording, you'll learn how to recognize your creative skills and talents and capitalize on them in order to cultivate the life and business you desire. And if you are ready to take your designing business to that next level, you can work with me one-on-one. I offer a creative mentorship monthly Skype session if you're a member at the $150 level. So that means you get to chat with me about your designing goals. Or if you're not quite sure what direction to go in, no problem, because I'll be there to help you every step of the way. And also, you get your very own commercial. And so what that means is I will create a 30-second commercial and I'll announce your design business. And this would be great because you really get to promote yourself as a designer through the podcast. So if you join me now, you'll get in on the ground floor and there are benefits. As I said, there's so many benefits available for you if you help shape the future of Power Pearls. With your influence and valuable input, we can take this exciting ride together. You can learn more about how to support the show by visiting again, patreon.com/powerpearlspodcast.